Good morning, and welcome to the Thursday, February 10th meeting of the Minnesota House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their packets available to them, and for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all the materials in one place, they are attached to the calendar event you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, would you please take the roll?
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Roll call will commence now. Chair Dabney?
Present.
Representative Sandstedt?
Present.
Representative Tricia? Representative Tricia? Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Daniels present.
Representative Damuth?
Damuth present.
Representative Dravkowski?
Here.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Jordan present.
Representative Marcourt? Representative Marcourt? Representative Mueller?
Mueller present.
Representative Richardson?
Present.
Representative Thompson?
Representative Thompson present.
Representative Walgamott?
Present.
Representative Shum?
Present.
Representative Joaquin?
Present.
We have 15 members present, and that there is a quorum.
Mr. Lee, would you please go back around to the members who did not respond on the first time through the roll call?
Representative Tricia?
Tricia present. Thank you, Chair Dabney.
And then Representative Marcourt?
Marcourt present.
Okay. All right, that makes for 17 members present. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Feist, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes from Wednesday, February 9th? And if so, would you be so kind as to move approval of those minutes?
Yes, I have, Mr. Chair, and I would move those minutes.
Thank you very much. Any discussion to the Feist motion to approve the Wednesday, February 9th committee meeting minutes? Hearing none. Members, this is a voice vote. If you would please unmute. All those in favor of approval of the Wednesday, February 9th minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Members, today we will be receiving a walkthrough of the governor's supplemental budget proposal as it relates to the jurisdiction of this committee. Today we'll not take any action and we'll welcome public testimony at a later date when there is bill language for us and the public to review. We're joined by a number of individuals from the Minnesota Department of Education. Please welcome to the committee the Commissioner of Education, Heather Mueller. Commissioner Mueller, welcome.
Good morning, Chair Dabney and committee members. I'm Heather Mueller, the Commissioner of Education. Thank you for inviting my team and me to the Education Finance Committee today to present the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's 2022 supplemental budget. I first want to acknowledge the two senseless acts of gun violence that impacted the Minneapolis Public Schools community yesterday. Our students, families, and staff should never have to worry about the safety of their students on a school bus, outside of a school building, or inside of our school buildings. I'm going to be very honest. I'm angry, and I am sad that with these, I had to utter these same words about another school in our opening statement 8 days ago when we were discussing the need for increased mental health supports. During my statement 8 days ago, I said that talking about mental health was one of the many conversations that we will need to have during this legislative session about truly meeting the needs of the whole student and providing support to our schools. And this budget is our next conversation in striving to do just that. Because budgets reflect the values of the people who create them, the budget that we are putting forward today is a clear reflection of what we value in support of our students, our families, our staff, and our school communities. This budget includes funding for evidence-based strategies that first and foremost center students. In spite of the pandemic, Minnesota's economy has provided us with a once-in-a-generation opportunity to make life-changing investments in our public education system. This budget invests $788 million in fiscal year 23 and roughly $1.7 billion over the next biennium in our public education system. These investments provide supports to lift up all students, educators, and families by tackling the needs and challenges facing our school communities due to the pandemic, as well as those that have existed since before it. You'll hear from the MDE team about a range of student supports that puts academics at the forefront by not only funding programs targeting literacy, competency-based education, and access to rigorous coursework, but also invests in opportunities that support the individual needs of the whole student, like multi-tiered systems of support, meals for all students, full-service community schools, and culturally specific learning opportunities. We know that when schools have the resources that they need to provide targeted and well-rounded supports to all students, our students can thrive academically, and you'll see this theme throughout the budget. We've heard from almost every partner and every corner of the state, including in this committee, that the mental health of our students and educators must be a priority for the state in the wake of the pandemic, and frankly, the challenges that have existed regardless of the pandemic. This budget proposes proactive, systemic mental health solutions, including funding to increase student support personnel, early mental health consultation and screening, and funding for mental health services. We know that when students receive appropriate mental health supports, they have improved academic achievement, they are more likely to graduate, and are more likely to attend and successfully complete college or enter into the workforce. In addition to the mental health supports, this budget recognizes the impact that access to early learning programs can have on the trajectory of our students' academic success. It's past due that we invest in a robust statewide mixed delivery pre-K program, coupled with funding our youngest children to also access high-quality learning opportunities. This research is clear about the impacts that high-quality early learning programs have, and it is incumbent on us to ensure that all children can have access and participate in those opportunities. Yesterday, you heard about the resources that we needed to provide special education services. The governor believes that targeting the special education cross-subsidy is one important solution to support our schools. But this budget also provides a range of investments for our students who need special education services, as well as for our intermediate school districts who do not have access to the same funding as other school districts and charter schools. The lack of special education funding hurts students who don't receive the services that they need. It hurts teachers and itinerant service providers who are overworked or lacking the tools necessary to help their students. It impacts programming that can be offered to our students, and it hurts administrators who are pressured to make up for this lack of funding through local levies and budget cuts. On Monday, in the Education Policy Committee, I supported Representative Hassan's bill to get more teachers in the door to meet our immediate shortage crisis. However, to make a sustainable, engaged, representative, and passionate educator workforce, our support of educators cannot end there. We must fund initiatives such as diversifying our educator workforce, building mentorship and induction programs to retain teachers, creating pathways for high school students interested in the teaching profession, and providing training for our support professionals. If we truly want to recruit and retain people in the education profession, then we must stop admiring the problem and take action by making real investments in the education workforce. Finally, the need to fund the building blocks of our education system remains a priority. The governor proposes a 2% increase to the general education formula in fiscal year 23, as well as reductions to the special education and EL cross subsidies and a bump to American Indian Education Aid. In research articles about school finance, they've shared that there's a growing body of evidence that demonstrates that increased spending on education leads to better student outcomes. When states invest in their public schools and create more equitable school finance systems, student achievement levels rise, and the positive effects are even greater for our lower-income students. This we know. Neither equity nor adequacy alone in funding education is enough. School finance systems should be progressive and must be student-centered. In Minnesota, we have set clear expectations about the high-quality education our students deserve. It's now time to align funding and programming with these standards and recognize the extra support that disadvantaged students need in terms of effective programs. Mr. Chair and committee members, I've offered a high-level overview of some of the components of the budget. And before I hand it over to them, I do want to share that I do believe that as an education committee member, that you have chosen to serve on this committee, and I have chosen education as my life's work because we want to support our students, our families, our staff, and our school communities. I am aware that we will have places where we agree and places where we disagree about how best to do this. but I will always presume positive intentions, knowing that our why in this work is aligned, and that is based in our students. We have the opportunity to fundamentally shift the trajectories of Minnesota students for the better. Like I said 8 days ago, our students, our staffs, our families, and our school communities deserve better, and this budget is our opportunity to do better. With that, I'm proud to have the MDE team with me to present the governor's 2022 supplemental budget. You will be hearing from Assistant Commissioners Bobby Burnham, Stephanie Graff, and Darren Cordy, and Chief Financial Officer Denise Anderson. With that, Mr. Chair, I will pass it over to Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham.
Thank you for those comments, Commissioner. Much appreciated. Ms. Burnham, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. But before doing so, would you prefer that members hold their questions until after your presentation or that they ask along the way?
Thank you, Chair Dabney. I could do either, probably after, okay. For all of us would be better. Thank you. And thank you, Commissioner Mueller and committee members. I'm going to start us off this morning by going over a few of our proposals that focus on really supporting our students. And the first of those proposals is the multi-tiered systems of support, which is a framework used by Minnesota educators across the state to ensure that every student thrives, not only academically, but behaviorally, emotionally, and socially, regardless of the economic opportunity, race, disability, status, gender, or home language. So we are proposing that we expand and scale up the work we're doing through our regional support system, which includes the regional centers of excellence, the early childhood special education centers of excellence, as well as the Minnesota cooperatives. We will continue and expand training and technical assistance and coaching to districts, as well as enabling validated evidence-based instructional practices across the learning continuum. The second of these proposals focuses on our bold literacy plan. We all know that Minnesota needs to be bold and act urgently with addressing the literacy achievement in Minnesota. So this funding will go toward implementing the Minnesota Bold Literacy Plan, which will increase equitable access to effective evidence-based literacy experiences for all students by ensuring school leaders and educators are trained in the science of reading. We'll also support effective implementation and measurement of instructional practices that are aligned to our state standards and utilize a data-based decision-making model through working with educator development, as well as evaluating resource deployment and policy. And we will also bring parents and community into this equation to help address the literacy achievement. And the third piece of this piece of supporting our students is around offering culturally specific learning opportunities through a grant program to schools, which could include partnerships with community organizations to build out class offerings and to support implementing coursework focused on culturally specific education opportunities. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Stephanie Graff.
Great, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having us and thank you, Bobby. I'm gonna talk about a few additional pieces within the area of supporting our students. And so I know Megan's going to pull up the PowerPoint here as well. I'm gonna start with competency-based education. Maybe I'll just give it one moment.
Thank you. Sorry about that. We are good to go now.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I think we'll start with expanding competency-based education. And so really thinking about an opportunity to invest in a student-centered, really personalized system of learning for our students, oftentimes referred to as competency-based education, really ensuring that there are, you know, opportunities for school districts through grant funding to ensure we're empowering students in their learning, creating learning environments that are flexible for students to master content, allowing for opportunities for students to have varied pacing at different times in their learning, and really individualizing our pathways on behalf of our students across the state, and then building local assessments to measure this within the context of our school communities as well. And so this really would be an opportunity for our school districts to apply for grant funding, to be able to implement this kind of a local competency-based system, and then think about MBE's leadership and support in this area as well. The second proposal is around expanding rigorous coursework. And so this is really thinking about how we can fund regional partnerships and district grants, knowing how critical it is to ensure that we have demographic representation and geographic representation within our access for students and participation for students in rigorous courses across the state, really thinking about particularly our students of color, our Indigenous students, our students with disabilities, students in Greater Minnesota as well, and making sure that these types of rigorous courses in high school are offered, are accessed by these students, and that these students are participating as well. So this is things like advanced placement, international baccalaureate programs, career and technical education, and then concurrent enrollment courses as well. And so this piece is broken into a couple parts of the funding. One is for districts to engage in regional partnerships to really support professional development, right? And for high school teachers to be able to develop course offerings. And then the second larger part is for grants to school districts for the expansion of these types of rigorous course opportunities for our students. 50% of the funding for this proposal goes to Greater Minnesota, really thinking about that geographic representation that we want to stay focused on, making sure these opportunities are available to our students in every corner of the state. The next piece is around increasing career and technical education revenue. And so this would be providing financial support to our districts to implement CTE programs and really increasing the amount of that a district can be reimbursed. It's currently 35% right now. And so this would be a proposal to increase it to 50% to provide some additional fiscal and financial stability for our school districts in really incentivizing creating additional opportunities for students to engage in critical career and technical education programs. And then the second part of this is really thinking about breaking down a barrier that we know is in place around transportation for students to access and participate in work-based learning opportunities, which we know are opportunities that we want to create for our students. And so thinking about creating a reimbursement program specific to transportation for students to be able to engage in a variety of experiential learning and work-based learning opportunities through our CTE programming in districts across the state. The next one is around supplemental enrollment. This is a bit of a technical fix, but it's really focused on ensuring that we have equitable access for our students across the state in our supplemental online learning courses, particularly focused here for our students. Approximately last year, 676 students that were enrolled in our tribal schools, our Bureau of Indian Education schools across the state. There are four of them. And so we want to ensure that students that are in these schools have the same opportunities to engage in supplemental online learning courses, should that be something that they choose and their families choose, just like all other students across the state can access. The next one is the paid high school equivalency test. And so this really is, you know, focused on the goal to ensure that anyone that wants to earn a high school equivalency diploma in Minnesota can do so, right? And not have the financial sort of burden or the cost of the test be a barrier for this to happen. And so we currently cover only a portion of the test. This would be a proposal to cover the full battery of tests for our adult basic education programs across the state, up to $144, to really provide that full cost in this program. The next one is around an online learning application sort of spending authority. This is a bit of a technical fix, but one that we feel is important. We do at MDE collect $250 in statute for online learning applications, which is required. And so what we want is to ensure that we have some authority to spend those dollars. Right now, we do not. And so we want to take that that revenue that we're required to collect, and we want to put that right back into the program and supporting quality online learning programs for our school communities across the state. So this could look like, you know, partnerships with research organizations or other organizations, really thinking about partnering with outside experts, right, to validate and to support our online learning leadership and technical assistance and training that we are able to provide. So really just making sure that we are given the authority to spend the money that we're currently collecting to feed it right back into the program and focus on improvement and quality opportunities in our online programs for our students in Minnesota. The next one is around aligning student eligibility criteria to state approved alternative programs. And so this is really simplifying the eligibility criteria for students to participate in SAPS and really looking at being sure that the qualifying factors for students to participate, and there are 12 of them in state law, really are crystal clear, and to remove one that is particularly ambiguous and challenging for districts to implement. And so this is really with the goal of ensuring that the criteria and the qualifying factors for students to be able to enroll in state approved alternative programs are focused on those students who truly are not on track to graduate and will really benefit from the resources and the learning environments in our SAPS across the state to really meet their needs and ensure they're on track to graduate. This slide, and I believe the next one as well, Mr. Chair and members, outlines the dollar amounts per fiscal year for each of our proposals. And so, you know, certainly take a look. This is just giving a four-year outline of the amounts that we would propose within each of the areas that Assistant Commissioner Burnham and myself just talked through.
Thank you.
Area.
Oh, pardon. I thought you completed. You paused just long enough. I'll let you proceed. My apologies.
Mr. Chair, thank you. We'll go ahead and move forward with the next part of the presentation, really thinking about students and staff mental health, right? And ensuring, you know, that we are providing robust opportunities for our students to meet their mental health needs that we know have been exacerbated by the pandemic and even were in place, you know, before the pandemic. And so the first one is around thinking about student support personnel, and really with the goal of addressing shortages of student support personnel that we have, you know, across the state, decreasing caseloads to ensure that students are receiving effective services, ensuring students, you know, that students have comprehensive services, and really focusing here on improving our school safety and our school climate to support student success. And so when we talk about student support personnel, and I know my colleague Heather Hirsch is able to give this committee a more in-depth overview of some of these proposals too, so I'll just hit some of the high notes. But when we talk about student support personnel, you know, we're talking about critical supports for students with nurses and counselors and social workers and school psychologists and chemical dependency counselors. And so what this proposal includes is aid for school districts and charters and intermediates to be able to hire additional support personnel positions within their school communities. And then the second part of this proposal includes really a workforce development initiative, which we know is critical, because not only are we, you know, needing to give additional resources to our school communities to hire these important positions, but we also know that there are shortages out there, right? And so we need to build, really think about that pipeline and pathways to these professions. And so the workforce development piece is really thinking about partnerships with community organizations, with with clinics, with colleges and universities, right, and other professional organizations to think about how we create things like, you know, fellowship programs, internship programs. We consider scholarships, right, that might be necessary, really flexible degree planning, field placements, loan forgiveness, right, and certainly thinking about professional development and leaning on our professional organizations to support us in building some of that out so that we're not only recruiting student support personnel and building the pipeline into the profession, but we're also ensuring that we're supporting those individuals to really grow and thrive in these professions on behalf of our students and our families and our school communities. And so that's the workforce development side of this initiative. And then lastly, some dedicated staff at MDE, of course, really thinking about, you know, a school health services position, and then people to support the workforce development strategies that we know are so critical too. So just building our capacity to be sure that we can lead in this area. The next piece is about school-based mental health screening and really ensuring mental health and wellness of our Minnesota students and families. And so this is funding for mental health screening. It's about $9.9 million per year and referral system in schools by school-based mental health staff, including school administrators. Really thinking about a per pupil allocation based on enrollment. Funds can cover, you know, professional development on mental health screenings, can cover, you know, resources and supplies like mental health screeners that can be purchased, school staff and time conducting screening and staff well-being assessments, and certainly other expenses, just thinking how critical it is to build our capacity to be able to screen our students and support our staff in self-assessments in screening for mental health in order to know where to support and how to support. The last one that I will speak to before I turn it back over, Mr. Chair, to Assistant Commissioner Bobby Burnham, is around school-linked mental health grants. And so this proposal includes about $6 million per year, really focused on increased need for community behavioral health services, particularly, you know, of course, as a result of the pandemic. This is an interagency agreement with the Minnesota Department of Human Services. And so funds would be distributed to school-linked behavioral health providers and other mental health providers, really to serve children and families with young children, as well as school staff. And so this is an expansion of the existing school-linked behavioral health grant program that DHS does run. What we know is about 57% of our districts have access to this program. And so many school districts are not covered by the program. And so expanding would certainly help more schools to come online and benefit from these critical mental health supports. And Mr. Chair, with that, I'm going to hand it back over, if it's okay, to Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Graff. Assistant Commissioner Burnham, I'd like to give the committee an opportunity to ask questions at this point on this portion of the presentation, if that's all right with you.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, so members, please use the raise your hand function if you have questions. I'm going to start it off, however. Could you speak more to the bold literacy plan, please?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, thank you. So we have been, as many of you know, working on moving the dial on literacy achievement for several years. And we have, in partnership with the University of Minnesota and the work of our dyslexia specialist at MDE, have noted and have prioritized transitioning the work that we are doing as a state toward ensuring that teachers, school leaders, support staff really are aware of and build their capacity around the science of reading, which is, you know, research based in the teaching of foundational reading skills and how the brain develops and how a child learns to read. So we know that we need to do something different in Minnesota to impact our literacy achievement. And we believe going in the direction of building capacity of school and support staff in their understanding and instructional practices around the science of reading is really what Minnesota as a state needs to do. So with this plan and with the $3 million allocation from last session for the letters training, we are off and running We are proposing additional funds in this bold literacy plan to support continued training in the science of reading and to build systemic capacity as a state to ensure that every region of the state has trainers and facilitators available to support districts in the implementation of instructional practices around the science of reading. So it's building up that regional support structure through getting regional centers of excellent staff trained. We are also looking to partner and continue partnering with our Reach Out and Read partners, where they promote early literacy best practices in well child visits in clinics. And we continue to partner with the U of M, the Carey Center, around our multi-tiered systems of support, which good core instruction is a key piece of a multi-tiered systems of support. So we are looking to really look across our system to embed these best practices for literacy and hopefully get that dial moving on our third grade reading achievement scores.
Thank you very much. You not only answered my first question, you answered my follow-up question as well. So I appreciate the efficiency. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair. And my question is for, I lost her on my screen, Assistant Commissioner Graff. I was listening to you talking about the CTE a portion of the governor's budget, and I have been talking several times to my superintendents about the need for students getting out of the classroom and experiencing apprenticeships and on-the-job training and all those things. When I asked them about CTE training and investments, they said, we have invested so much money in CTE and have gotten almost nothing from it. So here's my question. I love that we have a focus on this. Can this CTE money be used for something not just in the classroom, but for, I saw that it was, there's something for the transportation reimbursement program, but can that also be used for something outside like an apprenticeship program, not just for transportation? Is there some way that a school could invest in that as well?
Assistant Commissioner Graff.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mueller, thank you for the question and appreciate you bringing it up. We absolutely want to ensure that we are providing out of the classroom, real opportunities for students to engage in internships and apprenticeships and on the job training, right? And experiential learning. And having sort of those work-based learning opportunities in a variety of career and technical education fields. And so the answer is yes, that the revenue here, not only. So what we are proposing is that there would be a separate transportation reimbursement fund, because we know that has been a particular barrier, but other sort of pot of CTE revenue certainly can be used to provide these types of work-based learning and apprenticeship and internship opportunities for our students, and certainly would be supportive of doing that. What we're really looking to do here is increase our reimbursement so that school districts can expand these opportunities for students. Right now, they're reimbursed, I believe, at like 35%. And so we want to bump that up to 50% so that more of these opportunities that you're talking about, Representative, can be provided for our students across the state.
Representative Mueller, follow up.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson? We'll come back to you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Whoops. Yeah, I guess I'm unmuted. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This these questions and comments are for Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Go right ahead.
So this is an ambitious agenda for an off-budget year, and I'm just amazed at how many additions have been made. And I'm wondering, were parents involved at all in your decision-making about expanding much of what is listed in the supplemental budget in regard to programs and changes. Because I remember when I was in the classroom, we teachers just prayed that we wouldn't have anything too overwhelming to do because, for example, now there needs to be catch up among our students. And that's true at every level of education, K-12. So were parents involved in this ambitious agenda in an off year? Because I'm not sure how you're going to get it planned for the start of the next school year.
Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Representative Erickson, we've been listening to stakeholders and parents over a number of years regarding the need to do something different with literacy achievement around the state. So we have had numerous conversations around what that looks like. We have talked to teachers. The science of reading is being implemented on a statewide basis in many states with really good results. So Minnesota is at a point, given the support from the session from last year with the $3 million, to begin that journey of getting folks, getting educators trained in the science of reading. And many, many districts are even doing it on their own. So we are going to build capacity as a state to go down this journey of the science of reading and to get as many educators and school leaders and administrators all going down this pathway of ensuring that readers, regardless of the age, starting before kindergarten and going through a high school, that they have the support and the evidence-based instruction needed to ensure that they are reading proficiency.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Assistant Commissioner Burnham, I've done the initial training in letters, and you know, that's like 145-hour training. And I'll tell you, letters is, it's tough. You know, you just have to master it quickly but thoroughly. So the time element just concerns me, not only as a former teacher, but as a policymaker and as a parent and grandparent as well. You know, time is so important in our educational system. And whenever we have something else that we add, and I love the letters training, but it is strenuous, it is difficult. And so to achieve that going into the next school year is really going to make a teacher's preserve some time, some off time to do that training. But I'll get off that topic and I'll continue to be concerned about that. But in competency-based, I know I've asked Adosh Uni this question. Why is there no, and I think it's because we don't have much competency-based yet, but why is there no reporting of how many students in a district are involved in competency-based so we can track that kind of funding differential? I'm concerned about that. You don't have to answer that now. I just want it on your radar, because if we move to a more competency-based system, we do need to know, you know, within a district how much of that funding is geared for that kind of educational experience. And finally, are you able to provide us with a list of staff who work in these regional centers, whether it's early childhood or it's the other regional center of excellence, so that we know to what extent these are professionals assigned in the right area to help our districts. And I look forward to just receiving that by email. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Assistant Commissioner Graff, would you like to respond to the question on competency-based education?
Mr. Chair, this is
Commissioner. Heather.
Yes, would you be okay with me?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Erickson. You are absolutely right. So we do want to make sure the reporting pieces, I'll start with competency-based, the reporting pieces around being able to ascertain like the amount of focus on competency-based and how those are aligned is something that as one
We know that we have school districts across the state who are implementing. So that is something that we do need to be able to collect the information on. And as we move down the road of increasing competency based across the state, that it will be an important component. And so we do want to make sure that we are able to measure the success, the places where we're finding success and where we need to be able to improve. And so I appreciate you bringing that up. And that is something that we would definitely need to be able to include and are partnering with in all of these instances, our partnering with Cary and the University of Minnesota to ensure that we also have evaluation of each of these programs to make sure that, again, we can not only progress monitor and see where we are at in the process, but have a sense of where we are going in the goal. So that way we have the resource to be able to support and the evidence to support that what we're doing is working or not working and what we need to change. So I appreciate you bringing that up. I think the third piece that you had actually asked around the list of regional centers of excellence and the information, I believe that is on its way to you. We have collected that information and have that ready to be able to share with you. And then going back to your first question, talking about literacy and the amount of time that it would take for bold literacy as well as letters, I think is a really important component. We do know that any type of professional development, it happens outside of the classroom, and that time is precious because our teachers are tending to prepare for what they are doing with the students that they have in front of them. We did, luckily, because we utilized some of the funds that we had allocated to the Department of Education through ESSER, I'll begin to launch the bold literacy, and letters is one component. It is an intervention that is identified within the bold literacy, but it is not the entirety of the initiative and the approach to science-based reading. And so it really is looking at the practices that are embedded within that and being able to build around that. And so it's not a requirement. It would be something that, as you know, schools are and individuals at this point are able to opt into letters. And so we are working with schools across the state at this point in time to be able to build and implement the bold literacy plan, which is inclusive of a pre-K through grade 12, really looking at the embedding of the science of reading and then the intervention of letters. And so it is a slow and roll, but we want to make sure that as more and more people are investing in that literacy and around the science of reading, we want to make sure that we have the supports in place to be able to do that and to support them in that work. And we have had the opportunity to communicate with parents. It was something that we did prior to the pandemic, and it was something that we have done throughout the pandemic because we know that literacy has been something that has been at the forefront, and Minnesota has been dropping, right? And we're not going to shy away from the fact that that is the case. What we need to do is to do something, and we need to be bold about it. And that's why we were utilizing. And so I think that really gives us the opportunity to be thoughtful about how we want to approach this and with the evidence. And third grade is a great point in time and measure, but we need to start to get it right before they walk in the door. And so that is inclusive of what we're doing in pre-K, K1 and 2. And so we think that's a really important piece of that. So just wanted to reiterate that. And then just to go back, if it's okay, just for a moment to go back to Representative Mueller, I think that your point around being able to do work outside of the classroom is also incredibly important. And we know that our students benefit greatly by having the opportunity to do things like a job shadow, to be able to do some type of work-based learning opportunity, to be able to have internships and apprenticeships, and they are all very different experiences. And so we want to make sure that what they are learning can also have the opportunity to be applied, whether that's in a CTE type of course or in any other place or space if they are interested in. And so we are really looking at being able to expand those opportunities. And we know that our students are craving the ability to be able to do that. And so are our school leaders. And so that really is something that we want to be able to embed in. It really helps to create a pathway, whether that's in education or in manufacturing or in computer science or in any other part of the program. It's a really important thing to be able to do. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Uecking, you've had your hand raised. Thank you for your patience.
Oh, no worries. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to thank
the folks over at MDE and the governor for putting together. It is a really bold and historic plan to invest in our students when we have a surplus. It makes sure that we're not only catching them up, but looking towards the future and making sure that they can excel to their best potential, because as we've seen with employment gaps, it's not going to get any better, and we can't afford to leave any child behind when it comes to being able to participate in our economy. I have a few two questions around two different categories real quick. One on the competency-based learning, I went and visited one of the programs, and it reminds me of Shades of Profiles of Learning, just a tad. But I think from what I understand, it only works well if you develop the program with your teachers and then also have a strong way to educate your parents on it, because it is a lot different than when we went to school. And parents of a generation a little younger than mine too. Wondering if there's money in there to do that, or if there's language around requirements to make sure that you're developing it with your teachers.
Who would be best to, Assistant Commissioner Graff, I see you unmuting, please.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Joachim, thank you for the question, and that is largely what the funding would be for, right? So the funding would be for developing this kind of a competency-based system, which is inclusive of the family engagement work and the outreach to parents, right, in helping to build and sort of form this, as well as the robust training and professional development that would be needed for our teachers, right, to not only build this kind of a system, but also to support them, because this is a different way, right? And so particularly for our educators that have been in the field for a long time, this is going to be a shift. And so that intentional support is going to be really critical. So that is exactly what we envision these grant dollars going towards, are some of those pieces that you mentioned.
Representative Joachim.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Assistant Commissioner. I also like to lift up what Representative Erickson said about collecting data around this too, because we want to make sure that there's space for all different learners in that competency-based model, and that kids aren't being kind of pushed out or left behind. The other question I had too was around the rigorous coursework. I was excited to see money spent in this, and wondering if it would support a model that St. Louis Park has had for a while in their schools, where not only do they hire somebody to help encourage and encourage students and kind of recruit students to be in those more rigorous coursework so that they are more reflective of our schools, but that and students that might not have had the exposure to even know the classes are there, but are very capable of participating in them, but then also have that support person there to make sure they mentor them through those classes, because I would hate to set kids up for failure without having that support there when they're taking a rigorous course, that they might be the first one in their family that's done it. They might not have the support at home. They might need that little extra because it's something new. So I'm wondering if that money can go towards a staff person like that. I know St. Louis Park has put their own general fund money behind this for years just because they've seen such wonderful success in it.
Assistant Commissioner Graff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. Well, first, I would love to learn a little bit more about what's happening in St. Louis Park. That sounds it sounds like a really successful model, right, as we think about shepherding and supporting and guiding our students, you know, throughout these opportunities for rigorous courses, whether that be AP or IB or, you know, rigorous CTE courses or concurrent enrollment, whatever that looks like in the best path for students. And so certainly that's something that we would consider as a part of these funds, right? Not only, like, how do we think about you know, looking upstream and ensuring that we're preparing students for these kinds of courses, right? But then also, how are we breaking down barriers? And then once students are in these courses and participating, what does it look like to really provide that support? So we'd love to learn a little bit more about St. Louis Park and think about, you know, what does that look like as a part of this proposal as we consider expanding these opportunities and experiences for our students.
Thank you. Representative Joachim, anything else?
And just real quick, Mr. Chair, thank you. And I encourage you to reach out. I'm always proud of our school district and how creative and outside the box they are. If you think of it as a blend between AVID and College Possible on steroids, you kind of get the idea. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Representative Thompson, do you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Every year we go through the budget, we get so excited about the numbers. And the fact is, you know, this is a huge package. We get excited about the spending and the proposals, but yet and still, fact is, we have some of the worst disparities in the nation when it comes to Chair. So I have just three questions. One, maybe I missed it, but a lot of our kids are not going to graduate high school and want to go to college. So I didn't hear much about career pathways. I know kids who want to be plumbers. I know kids who are interested in drafting, woodshop, and some of these career pathways, but it seems we don't have them. But I can travel to Wayzata, Minnesota. See, I live in St. Paul. Represent St. Paul, but I can travel to Wayzata and see children with pre-apprenticeship courses. The second question, maybe I missed it, but I heard about, and thank you so much, because the community you speak of, when you talk about violence in the communities, St. Paul and also Minneapolis, honestly, we witnessed a bus driver be shot in the face yesterday in Minneapolis. And so it's almost like the people who could actually stop and help stop some of the disparities we see, which create so much crime. When I hear people say, I'm so upset, it's almost like a smack in the face. And so I didn't hear much about culturally intelligent mental health providers, especially in the communities that you speak of with so much violence. This is somebody's friend, honestly, who's going to come to school tomorrow, and that's their friend who did the shooting, and that's their friend who also may have gotten shot. And then real quick, the last question, and anybody can answer, community organizations here within the Twin Cities and surrounding areas already have their fingers on the pulse of a lot of the problems we speak of in the community, and I didn't hear much about in this budget about, or maybe I missed that also, you know, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I didn't hear much about, you know, organizations that already have their fingers on the pulse of some of the problems that we're sending all of these problems back into our public schools. There's kids coming to our public schools with a lot of baggage, unchecked, untapped mental health problems, behavioral health. There's a lot of our kids also being pushed into special ed. Special ed has become a dump site for kids with behavioral health problems. And so those are the couple of questions that I had. Anybody could chime in and answer. Thank you so much, Chair, for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. So, Commissioner, I see you've unmuted. Mm-hmm. What I heard was career pathways, culturally appropriate mental health providers, and community resources.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Thompson. I think there's a couple of pieces we want to be able to address is that we still have 39 more slides. And so in these next 39 slides, that there are a lot of the things that you've actually outlined are included in some of the pieces that you are going to be hearing coming forward. One of those is it is true that we are not only preparing students for, we are preparing, actually what we are doing is preparing students for what is next. And that is not solely a institution of higher education. It is also entering into the workforce. And so those career pathways are included in what we are talking about for rigorous coursework. They are inclusive of CTE. They may be getting a certificate in welding. It may be something in culinary arts. And so it really is inclusive of any type of pathway that leads you into what you want to do next. And so it is looking at being able to not only diversify and expand the type of coursework that's available, it's also to diversify and expand the students who are enrolled in those, and it's also to expand and diversify that also geographically. The second piece is looking at the cultural competency piece that is going to be coming. It's important to note that when we talked about the student support and expanding that for the number of student support personnel, there is a piece in that is inclusive of diversifying the student support personnel workforce and being very purposeful in that. And so that is also included in that particular space. And you will see that there is language that it will be coming that talks more specifically about how it is that we are expanding the opportunity for cultural competence and culturally competent professionals who are doing this work. And then the third is looking specifically at being able to have a diverse community. We know that we have community programming across the state that is very good at what they do. And we have funding, we already have funding that is already aligned for out of school time that is for culturally specific programs that is included in this budget as well. And that will also be coming in the next set of slides that we're able to present. So you will be hearing more about them. They are incredibly important points. And we have been really deeply thinking about making sure that we have those areas of focus, because you're right, is that that these students and that are impacted are in school today, and they are grieving for their bus driver, they are grieving for their friend, and they are grieving for the person that may know that may have been involved in any of these places or spaces. And so they are things that we are deeply thinking about.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, she just said 39 more slides, and we've got 35 more minutes. But keep in mind, we will be reviewing the budget further when we get actual bill language in front of us. Commissioner, would now be appropriate to call on Assistant Commissioner Corte?
Yes.
Assistant Commissioner Corte.
That's right.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Darren Corte, Assistant Commissioner at MDE. I am here to talk about our special education proposals, as well as a proposal that we have around school nutrition and school meals. So I'll just give Megan a second to get the PowerPoint back up.
Darren, I believe that Bobby is actually going next.
All right, I will go back off and wait my turn.
My apologies, Assistant Commissioner Burnham.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Committee members, we just have a couple more important proposals around student and staff mental health. We know that the emotional and behavioral needs of vulnerable infants, toddlers, and preschool are best met through coordinated services that really focus on their full environment of relationships, including parents, extended family members, home visitors, and providers of early care and education, and mental health professionals. So therefore, we are prioritizing, the governor in his budget is looking to expand the infant and early childhood mental health consultation in schools model, which we are partnering with Department of Human Services. So that funding will be for access to infant and early childhood mental health consultation for school-based early learning programs through grants in partnership with DHS. And then we are looking to further support funding for social workers who really are solely focused on the early childhood care and education system, such as early interventions and supporting the work that Head Start and Early Head Start are doing in this field. And the next slide just gives you an overview of the funding that is being proposed to support the student and mental health proposals. So I won't go into too much detail there. And the next slide, I will give an overview of our early care and education proposals. So as you know, the proposal for public pre-K for eligible four-year-old children, we are looking to integrate the current three models that the state implements to support these four-year-old learners, which are voluntary pre-K, School Readiness Plus, and the Pathway to Early Learning Scholarship Program. So we're looking to combine those programs and offer a full day state funded pre-K program for the most underserved four-year-olds using a mixed delivery model, which will include not only schools offering high quality pre-K, but our Head Start partners, as well as our childcare partners. Since we're transitioning out of the Pathway 2 model for scholarships, all the scholarship model will now focus on expanding eligibility for the Pathway 1s to income eligible children, as well as prioritizing the 0 to 3 children in that early scholarship model. And two Head Start proposals, again, is to designate 10.72% of the total state Head Start allocation to the tribal Head Start programs to solidify and stabilize their funding from year to year. And we are also looking to allow more flexibility with the state Head Start fundings to support them building the internal operations infrastructure and reconfigure their facilities. So this chart, again, just goes over the funding amounts proposed for these early education programs. And the last of the out-of-school supports is looking at the out-of-school time and the community partnership model. These grant programs were really intentionally designed to meet the July 1st, 2022 statute that has that must require process and to measure and report on the effectiveness of education program grants for the pre-K through 12 education program. So the out of school time community partnership program is certainly one of those funded grant programs, as well as the after school grant program, which is the effort to reestablish the after-school grant learning community grant program. And this funding will provide grants to connect schools and communities so that they can offer after-school programs that meet the needs of students and their families. Funding will be used to contract with Ignite After School to build a statewide system of support so that all after-school program providers have access to professional development and technical assistance. And then we are also looking to expand the very effective full service community school model across the state. And with that, this chart gives an overview of the funding we are proposing for those programs. And now I will turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Darren Cordy.
Assistant Commissioner Cordy, good to see you again. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Darren Cordy, Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Student Support Services at the Department of Education. Again, I'll be speaking to our special education proposals as well as a nutrition proposal that we have. On your screen, you'll see the first item we have is some additional funding for special education setting four sites. These are sites where 100% of the students at the site are receiving special education services, and these tend to be the sites where our highest need students reside and receive services. And we've heard from these sites, and in particular, intermediate districts and our cooperatives about the need for additional funding to serve these students, particularly in and coming out of the pandemic. The next item is about reducing funding disparities for young children with disabilities. Currently in our funding formula, there is students with disabilities actually generate less revenue for schools than students who are non-disabled. So this recommendation makes that change, as well as making changes to the eligibility of English learners and school breakfast programs to include early childhood special education. The next proposal is a change to the severe or specific learning disability model and transitioning to a statewide multi-tiered system of support model. Currently, schools have the option of using what's called the discrepancy route to identify specific learning disabilities. Critics of this route say that it requires school districts to wait before they're able to intervene when a student is showing learning issues. And so this would give some funding, some training, and some time to transition to a statewide model of multi-tiered systems of support, which would allow schools to identify, allow teachers to intervene earlier when they're seeing issues with a student's learning, and hopefully prevent the eventual identification for special education services. The next item is around extending the age that students can receive disability services until they turn age 22. Currently, under state law, a student can receive services through the school year that they turn 21. So this creates An inequity for students who turn 21 late in the school year, they receive less services than a student who receives who turns 21 earlier in the school year. And so this would just make it consistent for all school or for all students that they receive services until they turn 22. This next proposal would establish a visually impaired graduate program in the state of Minnesota. Currently, we do not have a licensure program in the state of Minnesota for teachers to receive a licensure for teaching students who are visually impaired. So this would create some funding to establish a program at an institute of higher education within Minnesota. And then the program after this funding would continue to move forward through tuition. The next item is around intermediate school district mental health grant program. This is a temporary program to pay for contracts with qualified responders to perform tasks and services to improve mental health outcomes for students attending intermediate school districts or service cooperatives that provide instruction to students with disabilities in those federal instruction level fours. And again, this is something that we heard as a need from the intermediate school districts directly. Another piece for the intermediate school districts would be grants to the intermediate districts for establishing and maintaining full service community school models and also providing professional development to their teachers and staff. Another item in the budget would increase funding for students in residential treatment programs. During the summer, they would be eligible to generate categorical extended time revenue for the instruction that they receive. Currently, only students enrolled in state approved alternative programs and two residential programs are eligible to generate extended time revenue. So this would expand it to all residential settings. And then the next piece is around education, life skills, and vocational transition programs. Under the federal funding that we received through the ARP, we were able to provide some additional funding for districts and charter schools around secondary transition programs to provide for life skills and vocational skills training for students 18 to 21 years old with disabilities. So this would continue that funding through state funding and would allow hiring or contracting staff, providing instructional resources, technology, coaching, and other supports for employment. And then these are the appropriations for each of the fiscal years that you can take a look at. And the last item for me is a proposal to create universal free meals across the state for all students, regardless of their income level. As you probably know, during the pandemic, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has provided waivers that allows the state and schools to serve free meals to all students at no charge, regardless of income level. We've really seen students taking advantage of these meals. These are high quality, nutritious meals, and in some cases, maybe the only nutritious meals that they're getting throughout the day. And so it was a priority for the governor and the children's cabinet and for our department to make sure that that continues after those waivers go away. It also requires, in order to maximize federal funding and reduce the burden on the state, it requires all eligible schools who can participate in the community eligibility provision, which is a federal program that allows schools to serve all students regardless of income level and then receive federal funding. It requires that they all participate in the program. And then you can see the funding for that program below. And with that, I'll hand it over to our CFO, Denise Anderson.
Thank you for that, Assistant Commissioner Corti. And I understand that there's only about 10 slides left, maybe even less than that. I misspoke earlier. My apologies, committee members. And we're hoping to have a little time for Ms. Beckel to walk through some spreadsheets for us as well. But right now, Ms. Anderson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair and members. For the record, my name is Denise Anderson, and I'm the Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Education. The first proposal in this section is an increase to the general ed formula of 2% in FY23. This would be in addition to the 2% that was funded during the last session. It increases the per pupil formula from $6,863 to $7,000 beginning in FY23. This increase supports Minnesota's investment in education programs for all pre-K throughout the state. The Gen Ed formula is the largest component of Minnesota schools' funding system. This funding is used, in addition to this funding being used for operating costs, it is also used to cover cross subsidies and gaps in other areas. This proposal also includes linking the categorical programs listed on this slide to the general education formula allowance beginning in FY24. So the increase on the formula is FY23, the linking begins in FY24. That linking would, to the Gen Ed formula would help maintain the current purchasing power of these programs. The second proposal in this section is to reduce the English learner cross subsidy from 6.7% to 59.3% of all English learner expenditures. The EL funding formula was enacted in 2003, effective for FY2004, and has remained flat since that time. The committee heard on Tuesday about the resources that are needed in this program area. In addition, the proposal includes funding to reduce the special education cross subsidy. This proposal would reduce the increase the aid from 6.43% to 12.14% of the cross subsidy. In the 2020 session, there was some one-time funding provided for FY22. The committee also heard this week, earlier this week, about the funding that was needed in this area. On the next slide, we have the proposal to increase the American Indian Education Aid and clarify the use of the Indian Education Aid funding. The aid would, this proposal increases the base funding from $20,000 per district to $40,000 per district for up to the first 20 students. Just as a reminder, each student above the 20 students generates an additional $358 per student for the district. In addition to, this funding is used to enhance the American Indian education programs and to build sustainable programs that are culturally and academically tailored to American Indian education students. This proposal also includes a technical fix to clarify that the aid must be prioritized on program and services for American Indian education students. This clarification will have a positive impact on American Indian students, and it will be easier to evaluate those programs going forward. The last two items on this slide in this section are holding the ABE formula, holding it, the growth formula harmless. This is also a technical fix to provide clarity on the ABE funding growth formula. This proposal clarifies that the statute does not intend for the appropriation to decrease. It's a growth formula, so it would be either zero or the extent of the growth rather than any decreases. We're seeing right now as a part of COVID, the average growth rate is now less than one. So we just need to clarify that this is a growth formula. And lastly, we have the compensatory spending at the generating site. This proposal increases the amount of compensatory revenue that must be spent at the site generating the revenue from 50% to 80%. This change will more closely align the revenue that sites have generated to the revenue that they've generated. And that is, then this last slide, as in the other sections, kind of lays out the fiscal impacts for each of the areas. I'll pause for questions before turning it over to Assistant Commissioner Stephanie Graff.
Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Members, any questions? Seeing Seeing none on my screen. Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Assistant Commissioner Graff.
Thanks, Chair Dabney, and thanks, Denise. Mr. Chair, I know we're running short on time, so I will go through these last three slides, as fairly quick and kind of high level, and I know you want to get to another presenter as well. So the first one, so we're getting into the last sort of bucket of our budget proposals around supporting our educators. And so the first one is expanded funding for the Grow Your Own program. And so really thinking about this sort of in three buckets, the largest one, you know, really is we had significant demand with the increase of Grow Your Own dollar amount last year, significant demand, and we're not able to fund many of the requests that came to MDE. And so we want to think about additional dollars that can really support additional opportunities for schools. We know the demand is out there to be able to expand access to teachers of color and Indigenous teachers by creating pathways into the profession. And so that's the largest portion of this Grow Your Own bucket. The next one is really thinking about our pipeline in early childhood as well. And so ensuring that we are able to get more individuals earning credentials or degrees really needed to enter or advance in the early childhood education workforce, again, to build out that pipeline and create pathways to the profession. And then the last area is really of this Grow Your Own proposal is really around teacher shortage areas. And so thinking about diversifying the workforce and knowing there's a demand with the request, thinking about early childhood, and then lastly, teacher shortage areas. And so a smaller amount as well for pathways for shortage areas that are identified by PELSB that could include career and technical education, pathways that could include special education as one shortage area. It could include world languages and potentially other shortage areas to think about how we're creating opportunities to meet the workforce needs in these particular areas that we know there are shortages across the state and in particular parts of the state as well. The next proposal is a statewide teacher mentoring program, and this is looking at $5.5 million per year for the development and really the implementation of a statewide teacher induction and mentoring program and building off of some of what we've been able to do with our American Rescue Plan dollars. And so we know how critical it is to support our educators in their first years in the profession and what this can mean for retaining our educators, you know, right away and allowing them to grow and thrive again in the profession. And so these would be grants for regional partnerships, right, to provide mentoring supports and partnerships with national experts in this space around mentoring and induction as well. And so so some of these pieces could include, you know, training and technical assistance, networks of practice for new teachers to collaborate together to build the capacity of teacher mentors to support new teachers as well as school administrators. And so really thinking about, again, those robust supports that are critical, particularly in the first 3 years of teachers entering the profession. The next one is around educator career pathways. And so this would be really looking at how we can encourage middle and high school students to become educators by creating opportunities for high schools and along with post-secondary institutions as well. And so so this would be inclusive of grants to school districts to establish educator career pathway program cohorts for students. These could be, you know, educator 101 courses and making sure that we're giving students the opportunity to be exposed to the profession. The next part is around tuition incentives for high school teachers to obtain credentials so that they can teach concurrent enrollment courses and create these opportunities for students to be exposed to the educator profession. And then lastly, really thinking about a potential of a pilot program to create, and there was earlier conversation about internship and apprenticeship opportunities for students. So this would be one example of how we can create an educator internship program to really develop programming, right, compensate teachers, think about mentors and paying educator interns, which would likely be high school students, to give them the opportunity to explore the teaching profession while they're still in their high school years. The next proposal is recruiting and retaining educator support professionals, knowing how critical our ESPs are in supporting the needs of our students. And so this is really thinking about funding for the 20 hours of training for education support professionals, serving students particularly that are receiving special education services and reducing the financial burden of the exam fees as well. So this would be reimbursement for expenses really related to, again, that required training and then fees for like the parapro or paraeducator online or in any other sort of exam that is a prerequisite for employment as a paraprofessional, and really also encouraging to recruit from former ABE graduates to serve as paraprofessionals and thinking about how we connect our ABE system to careers in education as well. The next proposal is around aspiring teacher retention bonuses. And so these would be really an opportunity, again, to think about supporting and incentivizing teachers in their early years of the profession. These would be retention bonuses for about 460 teachers that are new to the profession. We would prioritize within year teacher candidates of color and American Indian teacher candidates, teachers filling license shortage areas that I just talked about, or low income teachers as well. And so the employer of the new teachers, right, would be able to offer this stipend and really think about being able to give a reward for teachers within their first 3 years through retention bonuses. And then the next one is around early childhood family education teacher licensing support. And so this would be funding for student scholarships that would go to the University of Minnesota's Parent and Family Education Program, really to help address shortages in licensed parent and family educators across the state. And so these would be scholarships that are used for students from rural areas or students from traditionally underrepresented communities, and really thinking about the direct result being about 15 additional licensed parent and family educators that we would be able to invest in and support through this program. And then American Indian History and Culture relicensure requirements. This would be really an opportunity to have some dedicated funding to ensure that we are developing and implementing American Indian history and culture training for as a requirement within our teacher relicensure system. It's a fairly small cost with and really thinking about how we ensure that the delivery of the training, right, that we one have this as an expectation for educators to really understand the lived experiences of American Indian people in Minnesota and how that really applies to their roles as educators and working with students. And so this proposal really was modeled off of the training for the cultural competency pieces that are already a part of relicensure. And so wanting to be sure that we're really intentional in adding American Indian history and culture training as a part of relicensure requirements. And then just very briefly, the last two have no cost, fairly technical. The one around requiring QCOMP funds to be spent on ATTPS, which is the Alternative Teacher Professional Pay System, is a fairly technical fix that is specific to revenue that is reserved. And so just wanting to clarify the statute that those funds that are reserved by districts have to go back into allowable uses of this funding stream. And then the last one is really, again, at no cost, tapping into the retired teacher workforce in this moment as we consider workforce shortages and thinking about increasing our TRA earnings limitation for our retired teachers to really get them to think about spending, coming back and spending time in the classroom, filling substitute teacher vacancies that we know are certainly occurring right now as we're experiencing teacher shortages as well. And I'll just mention these are, again, the slides with our dollar amounts per fiscal year on each of the proposals within our supporting our educators bucket of our supplemental budget. And Mr. Chair, if it's okay, I would like to turn it back to the commissioner at this time to conclude.
Certainly, and then we've only got 7 minutes. I'm afraid that probably doesn't leave us time for Ms. Beckel's presentation today. I apologize to you, Ms. Beckel, but it might allow one question, given the usual length of members' questions. But Commissioner, to you, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. We just want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak with you today to share the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's 2022 supplemental budget and appreciate the opportunity to ask and answer questions. Thank you very much for your time today.
All right. Any questions for the MDE team members? As a reminder, when we receive bill language, it'll be introduced and we will hear it at that time, which will give us opportunity to review in greater detail these proposals from the Lieutenant Governor and Governor and ask further questions at that time. With that, members, Commissioner Mueller, Assistant Commissioner Burnham and Graf, Cordy and Ms. Anderson, thank you for your time today. We appreciate the in-depth presentation on a broad and aggressive proposal. So thank you all. Members, we've got a full week next week. We'll look forward to seeing you then. Enjoy the weekend. We are adjourned.